Bob Lindsay was a founding member of this church, Narquis Street, in its present form. There were other congregations and different pastors, but Bob Lindsay was one who really sort of set us on the track we are. And he once said that, you know, because obviously Christians are a very small minority in this land, and he once said, you know, the answer is just for more Christians to move here. I always thought, why in the world would he say that? I mean, we're actually right now in time of Sukkot, probably there is no higher concentration of weirdos on the face of this earth than there is right now in this city. And any of you going to conferences can have probably seen a few. I read the other day, well, it was 2 days ago, that David, son of King David, died after a hunger strike that went awry. I didn't read the whole article, but, you know, we probably know him. I mean, most of the weirdos here are from the West, and they're Christians of some sort. And I was thinking, why in the world, how could he see that as a solution? Because, you know, we're always here, and you're always seeing these people come. And the situation here is so complicated. It's so complex. There's so many facets to it. Any sort of minister or, you know, missionaries or whoever who move here, it takes them years before they finally, you know, get a handle on it. And for the first two decades, they're making mistakes and they're, you know, insulting, you know, to the local cultures and sensibilities. And you're almost like, wait, let's just work with the Christians that we have here. You know, they'll slowly become educated on all the issues. And you know, maybe we can work on a policy with the government on screening the new ones who come in. And Narquis is made up of what Jerusalem looked like. There's weirdos in this church too. Actually, all of us are weird to some degree. You're not here on a permanent basis unless there's something just slightly wrong with you. Because there is no sort of logical explanation why someone would choose this place, certainly over anywhere in the West. Certainly no economic reasoning, you know, or, you know, it's not more comfortable to live here. And in terms of ministry, you know, read people's newsletters going home. You know, it's usually they turn to politics or they turn to something else because they don't have stories of 300 people came to service and accepted Jesus. You know, it's just rough any way you look at it. But I've been in the States for the last year and a half, and we've actually never been to that many churches, so I was never really able to compare Narquis to what other churches are like. So this was a good opportunity for me to be in another place. And I'm just watching my time. And it was really something, because in America you have everything. You can get exactly what you want in the shape that you want it, the size that you want it, the flavor, the, you know, everything. You know, compare Starbucks coffee to Aroma coffee. Any size, any flavor, any, you know, there's all, you can get the description right to your liking. And churches are like that too. Especially in D.C. And D.C. is also kind of a weird place. Not as weird as Jerusalem, but it's also weird. And so, you know, we thought we'd sort of dabble and taste in different churches. And there you go. You have churches for young professionals, sort of, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And the service is accordingly young and professional. You know, the announcements are a TV commercial. A screen comes down, and it's a production, and it's done well. I mean, it's not the best people are. I mean, whoever made the commercial is probably working at Disney, you know. You know, the pastor's cool, the music's rocky and cool and modern and, you know, just right. You sit back and enjoy. Actually, the church is in a theater downtown in a movie theater, which is cool. But then we notice that there's sort of not a lot of young people or old people or weird people. And I didn't feel at home, so we moved on. You know, there's church of every stripe in terms of denomination. I mean, you can find your theology and you'll find a church to fit it. Everything's there. I'd never been to a mega church. I wanted to try a mega church out, so we went to a couple of those. And forgive me if you've talked to me since I've been here, you've probably heard this story more than once, but the illustration that sort of did it for me was the worship service, there was a guy who the music was very good. It was a little more mellow because the more mega you go, the more sort of mass appeal you have to have. And so, you know, the music's rocky and modern, but not too much. You know, the drummer's, you know, he's a little bit more tempo down and you know, a little more vanilla. So the worship is really good. There's a brass section and everything, and he's wearing sort of a suit and tie, and he had his microphone, and he, you know, has a really good voice, a little bit of a vibrato in his voice, you know, like when he would sing, it was kind of, you know, at the end of the tune would be, you know, how great, you know, that vibrato, because that appeals to another generation as well. That's good. So it was all very nice, and we went to a church the next week, a different one, and the same worship leader was at this church. The worship leaders had switched places because they were singing at different churches and selling their CDs, and you know, they did each other a favor. And so, but this church is a little younger families. There were kids there, and a little more rocky, it's a little bit more on the edge. And so this same worship leader this time he's in jeans and he's in a button shirt, and his hair is spiked a little, and he's got a guitar this time. His voice is a little raspy. You know, not so much of this, it was more of this, and everything was just right to the flavor of that church. And I only realized it was the same person later when he said his name, because he had so adjusted his look, his intonation, his tone, his style, his voice, the songs that he chose. Everything was adjusted just so. And you know, that I was frightened by that. I mean, that someone can be so good at doing that, and the West is like that. In general, there's just sort of there's different tribes, and they all have their own dialect, and you need to fit it just so to sort of fit in. I don't want to bash, you know, just the West and American churches, because obviously lots of good comes from there too. And we did find a church that when we can get ourselves out of bed, we go to. We are in Northwest DC. It's in Southeast. That was amazingly mixed generationally. There were old and young people. There were old people at this church. It was really amazing. Because most old people go to old people's churches. And they really made an effort to sort of accommodate different generations. Because in the West, when you move up or down a generation, you move up or down culturally too. These are different cultures. You know, if in the East, you know, there's, you know, different cultures based by, you know, language and race and whatever. You know, in America, it's by style and generation, and there are different cultures, different ways of thinking, different value system, different worldview. It was mixed socioeconomically, which is really difficult to find in America. There were poor and rich people going to this thing. And that's an uncomfortable position to be in because, you know, if you're rich, you don't sort of want to be reminded you're rich in the form of a poor person sitting next to you. And vice versa. If you're poor, you're not, you know, the struggles and life issues are different. It was mixed racially. And last but not least, it was mixed politically. D.C. is a very divided place politically. So somehow, and these things were brought up. It's not like they ignored these issues. They would bring them up and you know, and talk openly about these things. So that was nice. I really enjoyed it. The pastor is British. Maybe that was how that he was able to accomplish that. I don't know. We really liked. And it was funny because there was a few times when the subject that he spoke about on a Sunday was along the same lines of the sermons that were here. I always call on a Saturday and how was church and who spoke and what was it about. And so that was neat. So Narkees is not a typical community church. I mean, most churches are sort of based in a community. You have different people doing different things, and on Sunday they meet for church. Narkees is one, somebody once said, is a church of chiefs and no Indians, because almost everybody here is the head of some organization or some ministry. So all the week you're sort of doing ministry, and then you come to church because you like want to sit back and sort of be ministered to, or just relax, or you've been with ministering to weirdos all week. You want to find like-minded people who also minister to weirdos, or whatever. I mean, I can look across here, and there's, you know, there are like several organizations and ministries and things represented here, and all of you are the head of something. So we're a little bit different from a community church in that sense. And the other thing that's sort of different about Narkees is that there's probably no two people here who believe alike theologically, politically. Those are usually the main divides. I've found that what's pretty rare about this place is that they can be there's the charismatic, non-charismatic issue. Some people here are a little more charismatic, some people a little bit less. And it's uncomfortable, you know, sometimes. You know, if you're more of charismatic persuasion or experience, you know, if you know the person standing next to you is, you know, thinking, you know, this guy's a weirdo and, you know, this is not from God, that's uncomfortable for both of you, you know. But that's what's good about Narkees, because we're not all among like-minded people, and we're stretched in different ways. You know, there's a sort of like academic, non-academic divide in this congregation. A lot of people here who study the Bible, especially, you know, academically, and put a lot of value in that, and others who you know might feel that that's sort of taking away from the spiritual focus that we should have in our walk with God. And I think at Narkees is a pretty rare thing to find, in that there are people who believe that it's important that we study the Word of God intensely, and that it affect our heart. Because, you know, I don't know how it is elsewhere, but in the West, when you tend to go academic, you tend to go spiritually dead, and sort of those are the churches that are the traditional churches that are sort of dying off. And then you'll go to other churches that are really spiritual and vibrant in that way, and, you know, don't value education at all, and can kind of go off on certain tangents. You know, I think here we've managed to make a nice fusion. Not nice, important, I think, the way it's supposed to be. So I think there's an appreciation that here that God, you know, works in different ways. And you know, an appreciation that it's good to be uncomfortable. That we're not going to learn anything if we're all in agreement all the time. It's important to be pulled in different directions and see that God works through different people in different ways, even ways that are uncomfortable to us. You know, Jesus was all about action, but every profound statement he made was a product of his intense study of the Word of God and of society. Jesus was a quick study of the society that was around him. He didn't, you know, he wasn't just, you know, if you just love people, you know, in any way, then you're going to make converts or you're going to bring people over to him. He was sensitive to all those political, sociological, economic issues that are many times at the forefront of issues. Can I use this water? Is this fine? There's another very serious divide, especially in this land, and that's politically. And even in this church, there's people who are in ministry exclusively on the Jewish side. That's where they've been called. They've been called to serve in Israel and to help the Jewish people. There's people who serve here exclusively among Palestinians, and that's where they've been called. And then you have, there's ministries like Musalaha, and there's the Near East ministries who've been called to bring about reconciliation and sort of serve in both communities. All of those ministries are valued here, and they're important. And you'll find that in most churches here, it always comes at an expense, at the expense of valuing other ministries. And I think that, you know, we've done a good job at supporting both, you know, and believing in the promises that God has had, you know, for this region and for the Jews, and in supporting everybody else that's here, and that those promises don't come at the expense of other people's rights. That's not a popular thing in most places. That's what we find, I think, what's so amazing about Jesus is that here he is working through history. God has been working through the Jewish people throughout all time. And here comes Jesus, and some of his most amazing and profound and striking stories and teachings that he gives are made through some of the most unlikely, insignificant, inconsequential, unlovely, unschooled people. All these people are seemingly irrelevant to the moral fabric, to the political and social context, to the prophetic context of what he's set out to do, to the theological underpinnings of what his mission is. All these strange people are at the center of so many of his most revolutionary stories. They're like a bunch of Narkees people or something. And it's with these strange people that Jesus thrived and makes such central and amazing points through. It's a lot like where Narkees is. We're sort of pitted right there where we're able to thrive among these strange and wonderful people like ourselves. You know, you take the centurion in Luke 7. An occupier, a foreigner, right? He's an imperialist. He couldn't have been much loved among the vast Jewish population. And yet it was almost because it's almost what really excited Jesus about this person was that he's aware of his sort of irrelevance to the larger picture of what Jesus is out there doing. Jesus has come to bring salvation through the Jewish people for the rest of the world. Because he hears that, you know, he has a servant that needs to be healed, you know, big deal, probably every 5 minutes someone's coming up to Jesus with somebody to be healed. He says, no, I don't deserve you to come. I'm not even worthy of you coming. He says, look, I'm used to telling people to go here, go do this, do that. You can just say the word. And it was almost like that was what he was looking for. And Jesus is quickly like, are you hearing this guy? And he turns it into an issue not just of this guy's of his healing, but he turns it into a story of salvation. In verse 11 and 12 of Matthew. There's a parallel story of Matthew 8, 5 through 13. He says, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will have been thrown outside into the darkness where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, it will be done as you believed it would. It's a pretty striking thing to say. There's a story of the sinful woman. Jesus just constantly seems to be making stories out of people who are at the bottom of the rung. And he's not saying, oh, I'm in ministry to broken and sinful people, and I really helped so-and-so come around. He somehow turns their words into being these redemptive, revolutionary, amazing things that were said. Like pointing to the centurion's faith. You know, you have the sinful woman who comes and is kissing Jesus' feet and wiping wiping his feet with her hair and pouring perfume and they're saying, well, if Jesus was a prophet, you know, he would have realized, you know, who this person is and what's he doing. And he doesn't say, look, we need to be inclusive of all people. She's a person too, and she'll come along, you know, carry her, you know, put your arm around her shoulder for a little while. She'd be there too. He says, her sins have been forgiven for she has loved much. And he who has been forgiven little loves little. And she's suddenly been elevated to the top of the rung. And he's constantly making this message that this is what the community is. This is what a church should be.